This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Today's show is all about people, artists, following their hearts wherever they may lead them. Later in the show, we meet a Savannah native whose love for music and paddle sports has brought him to Charlotte and the U.S. National Whitewater Center this weekend. We hear some of his music. He's the bassist and the banjo player for The Accomplices. And we hear about the skin-on-frame kayaks that he builds. That's later. First, a woman whose love for theater has led her to follow the Downtown Core's expansion into Southend, where she and her partners have created opportunities for theater in some unconventional spaces. Donna Scott is founder and executive producer of Donna Scott Productions. They're about to open their production of Amy and David Sedaris' The Book of Liz at the Charlotte Art League, and she joins us in our Spirit Square studio this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome. Also with us, Toby Holmes, the director of Historic South End for Charlotte Center City Partners. Thank you for being here. And Ryan Deal, both an accomplished theater artist and musician. He's also the vice president of cultural and community investment for the Arts and Science Council. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for letting me be with you.
You're welcome. You and your partners, Donna, Tanya Bloodsworth, and Glennis O'Donohue, who's sitting quietly in the background, ready to take over in case you drop.
Right. She's here. Thank you, Glennis.
You've been working in theater and film for a while now, and it cannot be easy working in theater or film, for that matter, anymore in this town. But you keep going, and now you have stumbled into Southend and embarked on this new mission to bring theater to Southend. What keeps you and people like you going?
Well, you have to love it, that's for sure. And that's how we all feel about it. But we see the opportunity, I guess. We all have other jobs besides what we're doing, and so we're doing the juggle all the time, but we understand the importance of theater, the importance of having the community experience of being in the room with other people, live people, not monitors, not smartphones, and having that same experience all at once together. That's really unique.
You know, there are a lot of people out there listening, and we talk about theater a lot on this program, and a lot of people have never gone to a theater, never seen a live production. They go to the movies, they watch television, but that's the extent of it. So what's the big deal about sitting in the same room with the people who are actually telling the story?
Well, I think it just really gives you the one-on-one experience that a lot of people are craving today, quite frankly. I feel that, you know, the world is different now. Everybody's got a monitor in front of them all the time. And it's really important that people connect. And so I feel, and the things that I'm hearing from all of my friends and a lot of people around are people are really reaching out to connect. You know, whether you can maybe sometimes meet someone on social media, but you can go to a meetup where you actually meet the person and talk to it. And I feel like theater is part of that. And like even the fact that it is live and it's happening in real time, that's very important to people, you know, that it's happening right then and there. It's that one moment in time that you have with somebody else or a group of people in our case.
We live in this world of screens and we've become addicted to our screens. And
yes.
Patti LuPone recently on Broadway took a phone away from an audience member because she spent the whole first act texting, and she took the phone. Good for her.
Right.
Southend is there's a lot of young people who live and work in Southend and commute from Southend back and forth. Do you find they are as engaged in the theatrical experience? Do they want it as much as older people have? Because the older people came to theater before there was anything but the movies and television. That was it.
Right.
Is it harder to reach those people, the younger people?
I feel like you just want to use a different tactic, maybe. I mean, part of what we're doing with South End, with Toby, is we're reaching out to the apartment communities and we're reaching out in different ways. We're actually having one-on-one meetings with people to talk to them about the type of entertainment they're looking for in South End. And so I think that part of it really is, you know, rather than just looking at, we have all the statistics, you know, rather than just looking at those, talking actually to people, seeing what they want, seeing how they want to spend their time, knowing that they want to walk out of their apartment, walk over and get a sandwich at Common Market, and then come and do something fun. I mean, that's, you know, that's really, it's different than it used to be. People really want to have that local experience, I think, more now than they ever have.
There was a recent article about you and your company in South Park Magazine in which they called you theater pioneers, the three of you, since you've moved south to Southend. Is that how you see yourselves, as pioneers? Because, you know, there's nothing else there at the moment. Or that, for a long time, there hasn't been anything there.
Right. Well, I mean, we are certainly in a unique situation, and And it's unique in that the development is already happening there, and South End is working very hard. You know, they sort of sought us out. We had a simpatico meeting about having theater in South End, and they are specifically looking to place us there so that we build the community and we help to connect people in the community. And so that's a real unique situation, and we're excited to be a part of that.
So when Donna says they sought us out, is she talking about you, Toby? Historic South End, Charlotte Center City Partners?
A little bit, yeah. I think it originally started with Rick Thurmond.
Yes.
Rick invited me to coffee one morning, and we have coffee occasionally, as he's a former board chair for me, and introduced Donna and I, and then kind of walked off.
Here's the topic discussed.
Yes.
But from there, it was a very natural conversation and just took off. And since then, you know, Donna and her team have been fantastic to work with, and it's been a wonderful partnership. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thrilled that the Arts and Science Council is on board to help us along.
It's interesting. A lot of people, I think, are not aware that Charlotte Center City Partners also is involved in South End. Is South End really part of the Center City now when you come right down to it?
Absolutely. We're connected by train. And a lot of our residents are connected to Uptown and work Uptown.
And the tagline for Historic South End has been the edge of town, which has multiple meanings when you think about it. But it started life as a, well, it started life. South End was just a horrible place until it began to be redeveloped because of the links. But now it's a scrappy, edgy place, or at least that's how it was positioned. But then all these apartments and businesses cropped up like weeds in a field, a little water and they popped up. Has that changed the character of the place? Is it scrappy and edgy today, or is it home?
It is still very scrappy and edgy. You know, that edge of town tagline refers to what South End is today and the culture that's there today, and very much the culture that will be there tomorrow. And we, as these apartment communities and office buildings pop out of the ground, we are working very hard to make sure that that original vibe that was created by the founders of South End remains in South End.
How do you do that? Because the original vibe was, you know, a bunch of warehouses reconverted into design centers and places like that for creative people, and now you have apartments with 10,000 units down there now. They're not all creative people. How do you maintain that feeling?
We bring theater to them.
Uh-huh.
and we teach all of our new residents what we do here in Charlotte, and that is that we enjoy the arts and we support the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, we still have a lot of hidden corners in South End. So I often get the question, will this concept be pushed out eventually by development? And the answer to that, as far as I'm concerned, is no. We have so many spaces where non-traditional theater can land, I think we're going to be safe for a long time.
This push toward non-traditional theater, I'm going to bring Ryan Deal into this because he's with the Arts and Science Council. Why is that important? Because, you know, people think of theater as being in a building with seats and a proscenium arch, or seats and a stage in the round or something like that. But non-traditional theater means theater almost anywhere.
Sure. I think that's a great question, Mike. And I think the answer is multi-pronged. I think that new audiences are interested in curating their artistic experiences in different ways than prior generations may have. And so some folks may not feel as interested in entering a major facility, a traditional proscenium theater stage. I think theater artists and other artists as well are doing really well right now are sort of reimagining what the spaces are in community where people already are that they want to engage with, and finding a way to put their art in front of people where they are already living, working, and playing. And so it's sort of, in many ways, it's breaking down the edifice complex that some organizations may, that may present a struggle for some organizations to connect with the audience that they wish to.
The Arts and Science Council has been around for a long time now, and I think since the mid-70s or something, if I'm right about that?
1958 was our beginning.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah. All right. I was way off. And much of that time you've been spent trying to build up the arts, trying to raise money for the arts and distribute money for the arts to worthy organizations who are trying to do good things in the community. And a lot of that effort has focused on the Center City, because that's where, I guess, the sense of place would give you an idea that you need to have a symphony, an opera company, a dance company, and theater, and all that needs to be located in the Center City. But now part of your mission is to push it out
Sure.
to other outlying areas. Why?
Well, Thank you. Our new mission statement is actually to ensure access to an excellent, relevant, sustainable cultural community for the Charlotte-Mecklenburg region. And it's really suggesting a shift in focus on the citizenry. So maybe perhaps ASC begins measuring our success in the community by how richly the citizens of Mecklenburg County would explain their cultural life. And that part of that work is informed by this reality that folks are interested in experiencing arts and culture near where they live. They're interested in experiencing arts and culture that is reflective of their own personal experience. And as the demographic in Charlotte-Mecklenburg changes, as sort of the population density changes in various areas of the county, it's increasingly important that we're diversifying the portfolio of things that we're investing in to make sure that folks have ample opportunities to interact with arts and culture.
Given the limited nature of resources for arts and sciences, I mean, what are you doing to push arts beyond the 277 loop?
Yeah, perfect. So the support that we're providing to Donna Scott Productions is through our cultural project grant program. And these are program grants. They're not especially large grants, but the purpose of the program is to increase access throughout Charlotte-Mecklenburg. And so there's actually a really intentional piece of the evaluation of these grant proposals, which is to ensure that we're investing in all 7 city council districts and all 6 county commission districts. And so our work isn't over in any of those grant cycles until we can explicitly state we are actually funding cultural activity that's penetrating the entire county.
You know, before the Lynx Blue Line came in, South End actually was a place where lots of theater companies set up shop. They had permanent spaces. I think there was a cultural center there or a theater center there in addition.
My first show was actually produced there.
Okay.
10 years ago.
And then South End became what it is today, and it continues to grow and become more gentrified, for lack of a better term. And a lot of those companies, well, all of those companies had to disappear. All those spaces went away. Now you're bringing theater back, or trying to, and doing so in unconventional spaces like storefronts and the Art League, etc. Why? Why not find a building and make it a theater?
I feel like that's one place where this originated, and I think Ryan and I had a conversation many, many months ago, maybe a year or more, about that concept, and I started to feel it out and realize that that is going to take a tremendous amount of money. This was so much of an easier thing to start with. I think that's the long game.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we prepare for that with a very good short game, and this is the way to get there.
Charlotte Art League, excuse me, is where you've done one of your shows and where you're about to open your next show.
Yes.
That's a good space, I think, for theater because it has some big open rooms in it.
Yeah.
Where else have you or others done shows in non-conventional spaces in that area?
The first show we did was at the Trolley Museum, which is actually right next door.
Mm-hmm.
That's set up as a museum, but it's a large room. And so we did turn that into a theater for a two-night reading of Tanya Bloodsworth's play, Carrie Ann's Kiss, in January.
Which you've done before.
Yes, we have. We have done it before.
And, you know, I've seen Carrie Ann's Kiss. It's really entertaining.
I mean, it really
is entertaining. And it doesn't strike me as being arts and culture. I think a lot of people are turned off by the terms arts and culture. Carrie Ann's Kiss is as approachable as anything you would see at the movies or on television. You don't need to be book learned to enjoy Carrie Ann's Kiss. On the opposite, you just need to understand what that play is about, which is about what? Women in cosmetics.
Yes, well, competition and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
So do you think as a scrappy company that you're served by the term arts and culture?
Well, I mean, arts and culture is what we're doing, but certainly our goal is to entertain.
Mm-hmm.
We want to entertain people. And so we're looking to give people a really fun night out, regardless of what we're doing. So.
And we'll talk a little bit when we come back from the break about your next production there at the Art League, The Book of Liz, which is an Amy and David Sedaris show. We're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Relevant Sports, exhibiting the International Champions Cup, presented by Guinness. The French champions Paris Saint-Germain meet English champions Chelsea FC tomorrow at Bank of America Stadium. Tickets at Ticketmaster.com. Well, 25 years ago next week, the first President Bush signed the Americans with Disabilities Act, which attempted to level the playing field and eliminate discrimination for those living with disabilities. The ADA has certainly had a positive impact in that direction, but industry experts say there is still a lot left to do. And so on Monday, we will take stock of the Disabilities Act and its impact on people who live here and our accessibility quotient in Charlotte. That's Monday at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. The Senate ends a logjam over the highway bill. Republican candidates scramble for a spot in the upcoming debate. And a dashcam video of Sandra Bland's arrest in Texas fuels the furor over her death.
Join the Friday News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show, coming up next from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about theater in unconventional spaces, particularly about theater in South End. Donna Scott is the founder and executive, director of Donna Scott Productions. They're about to open The Book of Liz, which is written by Amy and David Sedaris. And if you are an NPR person, and I assume that since you're listening, you are an NPR person, you will know them.
Yes.
The Book of Liz opens at the Charlotte Art League in August. That's down on Camden Street. Toby Holmes is with us. Is it production director or producing director? Or neither?
Neither. Director of Historic South End.
Exactly. Director of Historic South End.
Sponsor and friend of Donna Scott of the Charlotte Science Council.
I'm challenged today with titles. I don't know why. Ryan Deal is Vice President of Culture and Community Investment with the Arts and Science Council. That I do know.
There you go. That's a mouthful.
Given that aside from occasional Charlotte Symphony concerts in the outlying areas, it would be very difficult for Huntersville, for Mint Hill, for Matthews, for other areas to have their own symphony orchestra. It would be almost impossible. It would be difficult for them to have an opera company. It would be difficult for them to have a dance company. But theater seems to be able to happen almost anywhere. How are you working toward that? Are you encouraging the development of theater companies, small theater companies in these outlying areas?
We're certainly encouraging the collaboration of the theater community and recognition of common challenges and opportunities that organizations large to small are experiencing. You know, I'm aware of 30 producing entities of theater across Mecklenburg County, which is sort of a staggering number probably for most people who are listening and maybe even folks who are involved in the theater community. And to your point, yes, it happens in Davidson. It happens in Cornelius. It happens in Mint Hill. It happens in Matthews and Pineville. It happens all across the urban core of Charlotte and out into the nodes of the neighborhoods. Yeah, when there's a will, there's a way, and there's a great cadre of talented theater artists who have made it their job to infiltrate this community with their art.
Well, let me turn the coin around and put you on the spot for a second.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because every big city has a symphony, every big city has an opera company, every big city, if they're lucky, has a dance company. We're particularly blessed to have a particularly great dance company here, but a city this size, usually they have theater companies of record or regional theater companies. We don't. How does the Arts and Science Council see that? Is it unusual? Is it disappointing? Is it embarrassing? Is it normal?
I think it may be an issue of semantics to some extent, how we define a regional theater or how we define a rep theater. And I think my question back might be, I would be interested to know how important those terms are and the definitions of those terms is to the sort of to the cultural life of the citizenry. We're certainly proud of the professional status of Actors Theater of Charlotte, which is now moving to an equity contract and supporting creative talent that is part of the equity union for actors and stage managers. And then, of course, we're really proud of the regional and national reputation of the Children's Theater of Charlotte, which is a huge employer of professional actors and creative talent as well. So
Will the time come when people don't have to struggle to do theater, when they can actually, if they're talented and castable, that they'll be actually able to make a living again doing theater?
And is your question specifically in Charlotte or across this country?
Yes, in Charlotte.
Yeah. I think that remains to be seen. But I think there's also parallel conversations for actors and other creative individuals across the country. I think there are very few urban centers in this nation where artists are planted and live and work full time. It was actually core to my decision to pursue a career in arts administration as opposed to a professional theater artist, because I didn't want that sort of gypsy life where you chase, you know, the next gig and wherever that may take you geographically. So I think these are important questions, certainly for a community, also for creative individuals in thinking how their art intersects with their professional life and where they sort of take up where they live.
You, Donna, have been a recipient, your company has been a recipient of an Arts and Science Council grant. Is that what,
yes.
Is that what makes possible what you do, or could you do it without them?
I could not do it without the two people that are sitting here with the support of both of those. Yes, I could not. What we're doing now as far as pop-up theater goes is the most expensive producing I've ever done in 10 years, because everything has to come in. So you go into a space, it's completely open. You have to bring it all in, lights, sound, chairs for the audience to sit in, your box office, you know, it all has to come in, and that's all before you do the show.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, if it's more expensive to do it that way, why are we encouraging people to do it that way? Why don't we give them spaces to do it in?
Well, Mike, I feel like that everything that we do is expensive in the beginning.
Yes.
And we're looking to figure out a model where we can make it possible to do it anywhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's you know, coming from a place where we do have a lot of renters, I feel like it's a little bit of a renter versus ownership type thing, where if you own a home, then you get all of these residual costs that you don't think about. You mow the lawn, you paint the house once every 10 years, you re-roof it. This is the rental scenario where, while it is seemingly expensive, I think it's probably a lot more expensive to operate a facility full-time in South End, mm-hmm. and we found that out very early on.
Okay. When you choose an unconventional space, do you choose it, or does it choose you? In other words, do you go in and say, I'd like to use the Charlotte Art League, or do they come to you and say, why don't you do a show here?
You know, it was interesting how this happened. I mean, we originally went to a lot of spaces in South End where we could have potentially produced, and we found the Charlotte Art League almost by an accident, and it turned out to be one of the most perfect collaborations I've had in 10 years of producing, or the most perfect collaboration. So I guess kind of it chose us in that strange way. But another reason that you don't, I mean, I've always been a producer that has never had a space. So one of the reasons that you would not own your own space is that you enjoy the collaboration. And the collaboration between two different entities actually gives you more audience, it gives you more people, it gives you more opportunity to reach new people. And that is something that's very new to think about as a theater producer, that you would sort of never have a space, that you would always be moving, but you would always also be collaborating, which would bring you all kinds of new opportunities for people and reaching people and telling your stories and other kinds of stuff and selling art like we were able to do at the Art League.
Well, I was going to ask you, and I read about this yesterday, but I was going to ask you, what's in it for them? What's in it for any business where you just pop up and do theater in their store or whatever it is? And I read that it did very well for the Art League.
Yeah, well, for the Art League and for any other space, if we are successful, which I've always been, I have worked myself in other situations out of the space, because it shows whoever the venue owner is actual value that we can bring people in there. People can see it. I mean, even just from being in the Art League, not only do we sell art, but somebody came in and saw it all dressed out in white for our theater show and booked a wedding there. So we have an ability to bring people in to look at mm-hmm. a space, and that makes us valuable to venues, business owners, and these types of things. It's a shared experience.
And you're bringing a new audience in that maybe
absolutely.
Not have ever been there before.
Yeah.
Is the reverse true? Do some of the people who frequent the Charlotte Art League because they like art and they want to go buy pieces of art, maybe stumble into the fact that you're doing a show there, and so they'll come see your show.
Well, absolutely, because we try to make sure that we're doing shows on the night of Gallery Crawl, which is very popular down in Southend.
But on the night of Gallery Crawl, those places are crawling with people who want to see art. Don't you get in the way if you're in the middle of the big space and you're doing a show?
Well,
don't
you know
they
what?
Bother you with
we,
sound?
We are learning as we go on this.
Okay.
So last time when we did a show, we Gallery Crawl starts at 6, right, Toby? Mm-hmm. And so they crawled around until 8, and then we had a show at 8. And we realized, or, you know, certainly my producing partners and I realized that we were, you know, kind of ushering people out, even though our audience was coming in and some of them were staying. So what we're doing this time is we are having a late night show at 9:30 after the crawl is over. So we're extending the crawl, and so people can come back. And this is kind of one of those things that you do when you're in a non-traditional space and you're working with the people in the venue, is you hold hands with them and you try to figure this out. Like, how do we maximize everything that's going on for everybody? And we feel like that our late night show is actually selling very well. It starts at 9:30. It'll be over probably by 11. So you can still actually get out at a decent time and have had a whole South End experience of art and culture before you ever get to us. So
now this seems like a good marriage, the visual arts with theater. But do people do shows in dress shops and shoe stores and
sure,
other bars?
That,
obviously.
That's a great question, Mike. And I think we want to celebrate the phenomenal partnership that has enabled Donna Scott Productions' work in South End, and also recognize that there are other collaborative ventures across the urban core of Charlotte. The Frock Shop Annex on Central Avenue has been host to performances by XOXO, which is a devised theater performance ensemble. Also for Paper House Theater, there was a performance of A Woman of No Importance that happened at the Frock Shop in Plaza Midwood. And then obviously, and this may be less an exact example, but the really robust use of the upstage space that Michael Ford has made possible in Noda above Boudreaux's, which was a wine bar and has been transformed into a cabaret and theater space that is animated almost every night of the week with programming that you're not going to find anywhere else in the community.
So. Ryan mentioned Noda, which is also kind of an edgy side of town, and for a long time it was an arts side of town until a lot of the galleries had to move out because of the gentrification. Are you in competition in South End with Noda, or is there a complement? Because you're on opposite sides of town. Is there a complementary aspect to this relationship? Is there a relationship?
I think there is, but that comes from a Noda resident. And while the galleries have left the streets of Noda, I think there's still a lot of really interesting art going on there, and the culture very much still lives there. So we're not at all in competition with Noda. They have a very cool thing going on there. To me, it has a lot more to do with doing our own thing, and I think it's very healthy for a city to have many arts districts or many art neighborhoods, and I would ideally like to see art neighborhoods all across the city.
As you, as director of Historic South End, talk to business people and to residents and to other people who live and work and just go to visit South End, what do people want? Has there been a conversation about wanting theater experiences in South End?
There has been, and that started very early on in my time working with South End. There's a desire from business owners to expand our breadth of the arts and expand the offerings, and they have been very supportive of this effort. We've got everybody from the bar and restaurant groups to the breweries to local shops who want to offer up whatever they can to help us out.
Let's talk about this play, The Book of Liz, which I don't have the opening date. I'm sorry.
August 6th.
August 6th. It will be at the Charlotte Art League,
yes,
which is on Camden Street. This is an Amy and David Sedaris play. So right there, you know it's got to be funny.
It is funny, yes.
What is The Book of Liz?
The Book of Liz is about a woman from a religious order that the Sedarises have made up called Squeamish, and she has lived in Squeamish her whole life, and she decides, for whatever reason, we're not going to give it all away, that she needs to branch out a little bit, and so she leaves the community and goes out into the real world, where she meets lots of very interesting Sedaris-type characters. So it is a woman on a journey, and the woman specifically that goes on the journey is in her 40s. So it's fun to watch her accept the Sedaris characters as just regular life because she doesn't know anything different.
There is no normal. Normal is a facade. Staging, as you have done for years, in a space not your own, having to deal with the vagaries of those various spaces, finding those spaces, it's got to be exhausting. I mean, it has to be exhausting.
Well, I mean, it's just, you're just kind of always on the lookout. I mean, I, you know, once I go, a lot of times I'll be in a restaurant or a bar, and this is maybe sort of how we started with this stuff in Southend is, and I look around and I think, wow, you could put an audience in here, and I try to count it out in my head. I mean, it's something that I can't stop doing sometimes when I'm in a space, especially if it feels like it's fit for performance in some way. And so I wouldn't call it exhausting. It's sort of like it's just a creative and different way of looking at spaces and like trying to figure out how can you know, the people that are in the space, especially if it's like lively, like so many of the places are in South End that we go into. I mean, I think there's lots of opportunity for theater and performance there. And so that's what I'm always kind of looking for.
Does the space determine what shows you do? Does it influence the way you choose the material?
Yes, it does. Now, I will say that the show that we did first, that we did in March, we had picked it before we had our venue. And so we learned a lot from that show, having that show at the Charlotte Art League, to be very smart about what we're producing now in that space.
Yeah. This I saw once, I forgot who did this play, but somebody produced a play in an apartment.
Oh, yes. I remember that.
On East Boulevard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And being in the apartment, it was a show that took place in an apartment.
Uh-huh.
So being in the apartment was just kind of like you were eavesdropping on the person who lived in the apartment. It was very interesting to watch it in that environment.
Yeah.
How often can you incorporate that kind of feeling into it? Because it really enhances the feeling of being in the show. You're in the show.
Right. Well, we hope almost every time. You know, that's our goal, is that we're providing opportunities for audiences to see new spaces. And we go in and we transform it, but we really lean into the space. I mean, that's one of the things that we talk about. And we talk with our designers about how we want people to be able to see the space, even though we're transforming it into a theater. We want them to understand the space. We want them to sort of get a whole feel of what it's like to be there. And that's part of introducing them to a venue.
And if I may add, for any listeners who are intrigued by the idea of theater in an apartment, I would just encourage folks to check out the work of XOXO. This is
okay.
Matt Cosper and his group. Most of their work is immersive. It's site-specific. It's created for a particular environment. And the audience, in many cases, becomes some piece of the production, many times unknowingly, throughout the work. And so it's a really interesting, different experience.
He just did that piece where you got on a bus. And
Bohemian Grove.
Yeah, went
right.
to South Carolina and became part of the play, although you're not a character and you're not brought out of the audience like you would be in another situation. You just are part of it because of the nature of it. This is kind of a novel thing. Will the novelty wear off for audiences? Is there a risk in that?
I don't think we're not anywhere near decline yet because we have a long way to go up the hill. I think people are just starting to catch on that this is a really interesting way to do it. So if maybe all things have a cycle, this may be a very long cycle because we're just on the upswing right now.
Sure. As South End grows, and it will continue to grow, and as these people move into apartments and condominiums, what do you hope South End will become?
Well, that's a great question, and I wish I could ask that more often.
Well, answer it quickly because we only have a minute left.
Well, I hope the South End will continue the direction it's gone for many, many years. You know, we were founded with this interesting vibe by a group of great people that were thoughtful about bringing a certain vibe to South End, and it's my great hope that we can continue to perpetuate that vibe for many years to come, that we remain an interesting place to enjoy street life and a full-service, very broad-spectrum neighborhood.
And very quickly, Ryan, how would you assess the health of theater and the health of the arts in general?
Well, and if you'll allow me, I want to say, I think our obligation is to continue empowering the creative community to respond to how our community changes.
Yes.
And so we want to celebrate South End and Donna Scott Productions and just continue to empower the creative community
Ryan
to respond.
Deal with the Arts and Science Council, Toby Holmes with Historic South End, and Donna Scott, founder and executive producer for Donna Scott Productions. Their production of David Sedaris' The Book of Liz opens August 6th and runs to the 22nd. At the Charlotte Art League on Camden Road in South End. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Guardian Ad Litem, advocating for the interests of abused and neglected children in foster care. Volunteers may become a voice for those in need at GALCharlotte.com. diannereem.com. It's Friday. That means the weekly news roundup on the Diane Rehm Show, the National Hour first. And in that hour, Secretary of State Kerry defends the Iran nuclear deal in Congress. Republican candidates scramble for a spot in the upcoming GOP debate. And a dash cam video of Sandra Bland's arrest in Texas fuels debate over her death. Those are the stories, or just some of the stories, they'll be talking about with a panel of journalists coming up in the first hour, the International Hour, coming up at 11, all on the Diane Rehm Show right here. And when we come back, a look at skin over frame kayaking, but also music. Or maybe it's the other way around. Stick around, we'll find out.
Tom Chester, General Manager of Tyndall Subaru in Gastonia, a WFAE underwriter.
There's a lot of listeners, and it's a very high-quality type of programming, and we like being associated with that high-quality type of approach to news and information.
Underwriting on WFAE says a lot about your business. For more information, email underwriting@wfae.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHA. I'm Mike Collins. Love can take you to a lot of places. In this case, Zach Smith's love for music and paddle sports will bring him to Charlotte and the U.S. National Whitewater Center, where his band, The Accomplices, will be playing at the River Jam this weekend.
If you got good love, I don't overthink it. Put your chips out on the line. God only knows how hard I try, oh, to swallow my pride. And if you got the time, I don't ever waste it. Take a walk, see what you find. And don't we all know how hard we try, oh, if you got some time. But I've got a lot of love I'm cashing out on time. I get what you need, ain't no use for anymore. I feel I'm winning and I'm losing at the same time. Oh, to swallow my pride.
Zach sings and plays bass and banjo for The Accomplices, but also has skills as a sea and surf kayak instructor and guide. He splits his time between that and his music and building skin-on-frame kayaks. We're going to explore all of that with Zach Smith right now. He joins us by phone in advance of his arrival tomorrow at the Whitewater Center from Savannah. Zach, welcome to the program.
Morning, Mike. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. You are from Savannah. You are in Savannah right now. Your band, The Accomplices, seems to be really connected to Savannah. How often do you travel?
We travel probably about every 3 to 5 weeks, but we play a lot around Savannah and throughout the Southeast.
And you're connected in Savannah to something called The Garage. We just spent 40 minutes talking about arts and small group arts and incubation of arts in Charlotte here. The Garage is Savannah's music collective. Talk about that. What is that?
The Garage is a new project started by Matt Collette and a partner of his, Colin. It's a rehearsal space, a studio space, performance space, and really an arts collective based around music, but we also have photographers and artists that are working in that space as well.
Is it well supported by Savannians, if that's how you say it?
It is fairly new, so there are a lot of people behind it, but I think that the support is going to grow even more.
Now, you're also a kayaker. I said this, and this is kind of the interesting part of this. You've been working in that industry for 13 years. Which of these pursuits, music or kayaking, is actually the full-time job here?
I'd say it's probably about 60-40, half and half. I work... I work daytimes guiding tours and working in the shop, and then I play music by night and travel here and there.
As you will soon discover, I know nothing about kayaking, so I'm going to ask you some silly questions here, at least silly to you probably. As you just said, you guide kayak tours. through areas of coastal Georgia, and you teach kayaking and stand-up paddleboarding. I know that. Is this where you started doing this, in the Savannah area?
Yeah, you know, I was in the Boy Scouts growing up, and I started canoeing, camping, as many paddlers do. And this area is really great for sea kayaking, to get out into the marshes and the coastal creeks. It's tidally fed. We have wind, we have waves. So the sea kayak is the preferred method of travel. You can carry gear below deck. You can wear a skirt. You can paddle through rough water. And they're fast, seaworthy boats.
Let's define some terms here. You can put your gear below deck. I mean, there's not a lot of deck, is there, in a kayak? There's not a lot of depth below the surface of the kayak, is there?
Well, that's true. You sit about at waterline,
okay,
but your gear goes below deck, sealed with a hatch so that the water can't come in and get all your gear wet.
Okay.
But my boat is about 17 foot long, so it's a fast ocean-going vessel.
And the challenge, I'm told, in down there in that part of the world, is the tidal shift. I knew nothing about this until I read it yesterday. Savannah has the second most dramatic tide shift in North America, behind someplace in Nova Scotia. What's the impact of that?
It means that a lot of water is moving at different times during the day. If you go in the middle of a tidal cycle, you'll have a pretty strong current to either paddle against or with. So you want to try and plan your trips accordingly to which way that water is moving. And if you're unaware of it, it can be pretty challenging.
I'm told the first time that you discovered that it was very challenging for you. You didn't know about it, and it occurred to you. And what happens when that happens? You're just essentially paddling against a very strong current?
It can kind of be like being on a conveyor and feel like you're not making any progress against the current. So,
okay. You also build your own boats, and this is where that skin-on-frame kayaking that I talked about earlier in the introduction comes in. How did you start building your own? Why would you build your own kayak?
Well, I was always sort of romanced by the aesthetic of a hand-built kayak. I saw these wooden kayaks that were really beautiful. And I met a person who specialized in skin-on-frame kayak building who lived in Oregon. And he has a business called Cape Falcon Kayaks, and his name is Brian Schultz. And I lived with him for about a year and helped teach and work with his boat-building classes.
And when we say skin, we think of animal skins, but that's how it started with the native population, but that's not what they are now. They're nylon, is that right?
Right. It's a canvas nylon skin that is stretched over a frame, much like stretching a painter's canvas over a wooden frame. You can build relatively quickly with a wooden frame. Within a few days, you can have a frame. And then with that canvas stretched over and coated with a polyurethane, you can have an ocean-going vessel within a week or 2 weeks.
And I would guess it one of the points here is that it's very light, so it's easy to carry around. Would that be right?
That is a major advantage. I have a Greenland-style kayak that weighs about 25 pounds, and I have a more modern variation of the skin-on-frame style that weighs about 30 to 35 pounds.
Now, you kind of got involved in this in the Boy Scouts, and you fell in love with paddling and with kayaking. What is it about that endeavor that really makes you happy, turns you on, makes you want to do it over and over, and teach it for that matter?
Well, it's sort of like my meditation. It's always a different environment. There's always something new to see. It's quiet and peaceful, and you are forced to be in the moment, much like the same experience I get with music.
Which is what we need to talk about, because you're coming here this weekend. You and your band, The Accomplices, are coming here this weekend to play at the U.S. National Whitewater Center River Jam at 7 o'clock, I think, tomorrow night. Talk about your band. It's gotten a lot of high praise from critics who say that don't try to pigeonhole what you do. You may think that you're a bluegrass band or something of that nature, but you pigeonhole the band at your own risk.
Well, we are made up of upright bass, fiddle, guitar, and drums. And we call our music Americana, folk. Some people call it rock music. It's a lot of different influences in there. We come from a lot of different backgrounds. I studied orchestra, jazz music, and our fiddle player is the bluegrass and old-time aficionado in the band. And then our guitar player is more the rock and roll guy, folk musician. And our drummer used to front an R&B band as the lead singer of that band. So we have a lot of influences.
Yeah, so let's hear another piece. We opened the segment with one of your pieces of music. Let's hear another one. This is a song called Into the Sun.
Passing by, sing a scene I'm feeling now. Hold on, here it was and there it goes. Well, I'm nowhere, do you know where? Here I am. How are you? It's been so long. And words rang true like they came from the sun and made their way down Main Street to the hearts of everyone. Here it was, and there it goes. La, la, la.
A group called The Accomplices. Zach Smith is one of the accomplices. He will be in town tomorrow at the Whitewater Center, and we're talking to him now on Charlotte Talks. Let's talk about the process. Since you have these disparate people, you have the fiddle player and the guitarist and the drummer and yourself on banjo and bass and vocals, all from different musical disciplines. What's the process of choosing material? I assume that you write your own songs as well. How do you do it?
Well, it's a process where we all collaborate really well together, and we've learned how to work with each other's strengths. So some of us are really talented with lyrics. Others are really strong at arranging and coming up with melodies. So we do really well with this songwriting process, and we're getting better and better all the time. So.
You've had a number of different musical organizations in your life. Most musicians go through several different bands and collaborative efforts. How long have the Accomplices been together?
We started playing in 2010 as a duo, guitar and upright bass, and Matt and I learned to sing together and harmonize together, and then we added a drummer, and shortly after that, we found a fiddle player, a dobro player, and it's gone through a few evolutions to what it is now with the four-piece.
Mm-hmm. So they say you're not necessarily a bluegrass band. I get more of an Americana band, it seems to me. But how do you agree with the fact that you defy description or that you would be pigeonholed at your own risk?
We like to fall within that Americana genre, because it seems like it encompasses a lot of different categories, and therefore we can explore some of those avenues. Some people say we look like a bluegrass band, but we really like a lot of different types of music, so that whole Americana genre seems to give us the freedom of trying different things.
I've read a lot of critical reviews of your material, either live or elsewhere, and the word that crops up a lot is unique. If you agree with that appellation, did that quality, did you set out to achieve uniqueness, or did it just evolve over time organically?
I think it evolved over time. You know, we definitely play some traditional tunes that are in the bluegrass style or in the rock and roll style, but we're coming up with more and more of our own material that takes a few of those elements from different genres there and sort of blends them together.
People here in Charlotte may know you because I know that you've played the Evening Muse in Noda in the past. You play a lot in Georgia and North and South Carolina at venues scattered around those three states, but you've also performed in Alaska. That's so far away. I'm just curious how that came about.
Well, that was actually through my connection with paddle sports and kayaking. A fellow guide that I worked with is working in Southeast Alaska as a biologist, and she counts the fish that they bring in on the fishing boat. And a woman that she was working with is the organizer of this festival, and she mentioned that she was looking for a band for this particular festival, and she recommended our band. They listened to our music and ended up calling me, and we put it all together, and it was a really fun and exciting trip for us.
So how much of your kayaking experience plays into the fact that your band is playing tomorrow at the U.S. National Whitewater Center for the River Jam?
I think it probably has a good bit of influence to do with it. I tried to get that show for a little while. I'm very interested in paddling myself on the course. I've been there once before, mm-hmm. and I like doing the crossover of ocean kayaking to river kayaking, and they have a really awesome facility there.
Is there something in common, because you're so into both the music and the kayaking, is there something that the two of those have in common?
I think that paddling and music, anytime you can be in the present moment, that's kind of what both of these activities have in common. And I really enjoy that, where I'm forced to enjoy my present moment and appreciate it to its fullness. And it seems to me that the outdoors and music tend to offer both of those things.
Zach Smith, who plays bass, I think banjo, and also sings with the Accomplices. They're performing Saturday at 7 at the U.S. National Whitewater Center for the River Jam. Thanks for talking to us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production.